This is the Wonder Health Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Ritter, and each Sunday I am so excited to talk to game changers, transformational leaders, and functional health and wellness experts who inspire us to light up our lives so that we can go out and light up this world. Wonder Health presents Gut Check Summit, the legit guide to how your gut health affects everything, April the 6th, 2019 in Fort Collins, Colorado. From now until February the 15th, take part in the early bird special of $169. You may register and learn more at wonderhealth.com, and that is wonder with a U. I am Andrea Ritter with the Wonder Life Podcast, and I am so excited to be here today with my good friend Katie Ortman Doble. She is an extraordinary woman for so many reasons. However, she is writing a book. Would you call it a memoir?
Yes.
A memoir. I couldn't figure out if like memoirs were for dead people or not. And I'm like, I could probably look at Google. But I never figured out. So Katie is in the process of writing her memoir called
Love Your Future Happy Self.
Love Your Future Happy Self. And she's going to just share how she got to this book and this journey. And honestly, she's a transformational leader on this planet, and she is changing her life through her own practices. And she's going to share this with you and light you up. So welcome, Katie.
Thank you for having me, Andrea. That was a lovely introduction. So the book is called Love Your Future Happy Self. And a lot of times throughout my life, I've joked about, oh, this will go in my book. And for a really long time, it was totally a joke and not something I ever seriously considered doing. Until in my early 30s, I was diagnosed with cancer and started on this crazy health journey. And people started to say, you should write a book. And so I started to really think about it. And I never really considered myself a writer, but I am the daughter of two English majors. And I started blogging after my first diagnosis, really as a way to deal with it and process everything. And that's when I decided I actually have a lot to say and a lot to share, and I'm going to do this. So I did a lot of the writing. I'm still doing a lot of the writing. And a couple of years ago, it kind of dawned on me how to shape the book. And through my research, I've been just binge reading memoirs and getting ideas of how people tell their stories. And I decided to call it Love Your Future Happy Self because the book is really about the continual rise and fall of my self-confidence as a woman. And I think it's something that a lot of women will relate to. And I would imagine men. I just am not a man, so I don't know what the rise and fall of their self-confidence looks like. But for women, I have a lot of girlfriends, and I know that we all go through ups and downs, and things happen in our lives. And sometimes we handle them gracefully, and other times we don't. And what I've done in my book is I've outlined three major things that have happened to me in my life. When I was 15 years old, my mom passed away from pancreatic cancer. When I was 25 years old, I went through something that I'm not ready to share yet, but it was wrapped in shame, and it was something that haunted me and left me very isolated. And then at 31 years old, I was diagnosed with cancer for the first time, and at 32, it metastasized to my liver and became stage 4 uveal melanoma. The way that I've positioned the book is that I write a letter to my 15, 25, and 31-year-old self and tell her what she's about to go through and how she's going to get through it. And the big thing when my mom died was that your mom is, for most people, your biggest fan in life. And I lost that, and I lost a lot of my self-confidence with that. And I felt incredibly alone. And I told my 15-year-old self in the letter in the book, I was going to get this love back from this amazing community that I had around me. 25-year-old Katie thought that I was damaged goods and that no man would ever love me. And so I tell her in the letter that it's going to be a rough patch, but that I'm going to get through it. And that in the end, I'm going to have an amazing man by my side, and that he is British and also comes with a really sexy accent. And then my 31-year-old self, I finally, throughout this journey with cancer, really, truly, for the first time in my life, love myself as I did when I was 14 years old. I kind of have come full circle in having my self-confidence back and being truly confident in who I am. And cancer has given me that. And so it's that sort of in a nutshell what the book is about. And then it's just peppered with crazy dating stories and just
health. You'll have to read the book. You'll have to read the book.
But that in a nutshell is what it's about. And my message is, I would say my target audience is primarily young women, 20s and 30s. And I want to inspire young women to know that there are going to be ups and there are going to be downs, but you just have to trust yourself and love yourself. And in the end, you can really be happy.
So you bring up so many crazy and interesting points, and they're not crazy. It's just like, it's crazy because it's like you're hitting on all the things that every woman, every person goes through. And here again, we don't know about men because we aren't men, but like, no matter what you go through in life, you go through these points that you've gone through, and yours have been pretty dramatic, if you will. Yeah. Parent to have the event occur when you're 25 that you will share when you're ready, and then to have cancer. Like, not everyone has to have that sort of wake up. Like, those are three like major wake ups to do this. But like, you talk about, you know, loving yourself. Like, where did you even start? I mean, what does that even mean?
Well, first I'll start by telling you something very funny. My husband one day was asking me, what is your book about? And he was with me when I had this epitome of, I'm calling it Love Your Future Happy Self. We were driving back from the Santa train, the Georgetown Loop. And all of a sudden, I turned the music off and I said, just don't talk to me. I have an idea and it's brewing in my head. And I just, give me a minute. And I'm like crying and I'm so excited because I'm like, I feel like I finally have shape to this dream of mine. And I tell him about it and he's like, yeah, that's pretty cool. And then, you know, like a year later, he's like, so what's your book about again? And I said, really, Nick, it's just about self-love. And he freaked out. And he was super critical. He said, Katie, you can't write about that. You can't say that. I can't believe you're writing a book. Like, you can't say that. You have to call it something else. And I'm thinking, what is your problem? Like, it's about self-love. And he finally was like, Katie, you can't use that phrase. And I said, Nick, what does self-love mean to you? Well, in Britain, self-love is masturbation. And so he thought that... I don't know what he thought I was doing. And
that is so funny.
I laughed hysterically. And then I got paranoid because I thought, well, I've been telling everybody my book is about self-love. And I Google it. And in America, self-love is what we think it is. It's about and sure enough, in Britain, that it is something else. So that's just
honestly, that is a whole other podcast. And we need to have Nick on because that is... I love that they call it self-love.
Yes, I do too.
It's so good.
It's very...
That's like book number two.
Yes, exactly. All about self-love. We'll get really crazy then. But really, my health journey... So before I was diagnosed, I considered myself a happy person. But now when I look back, I really wasn't because I didn't truly love myself. And... in my journey with cancer, it's really been a slap in the face to take care of myself. I'm a people pleaser. I'm the youngest of four. I stretch myself. I still stretch myself. I struggle to say no. I'm a busy lady, but I've learned to set my boundaries, and I've learned that I thrive off of being busy and doing things for other people. So that's a part of me. And I accept that and I'm okay with that. But I've also learned that I have to put myself first and take care of myself. Yeah. I used to feel really guilty when I got massages, when I got facials, when I went and got my nails done. And now that's all a part of my self-love. That's a part of me taking care of myself. I've also learned a lot more about massage therapy and that it's very therapeutic. And I've had many people tell me you need to be getting massages. And I have reminded myself, I mean, now I get them monthly and it's a part of me taking care of myself. So I've discovered a lot of different things well beyond massage therapy that I do. I do Reiki, I do acupuncture. I've done body talk. I've done healing waters. I try a lot of different things and I do a lot of different things that serve me. And I don't feel guilty about that anymore.
That is amazing. I mean, I think that, I mean, here again, like the whole guilt thing is such a waste of our lives. It's such a waste of energy. And, you know, people talk about the Catholic guilt, the Jewish guilt. Women feeling guilty about taking care and loving themselves. And it's like, that has got to stop. And what's beautiful is that you stopped it. Do you think that like, were you feeling that guilt like in your younger years? And as you've gotten a little bit, you know, more mature, that's changed? Or do you really think that what you've gone through with cancer stopped you in your tracks, allowed you to look back and go, holy shit, like, this is my life and I'm going to love myself so that I can live.
I think in the early years, a lot of it had to do with just money. And that, you know, when you're fresh out of college and you're barely making any money, it's such a luxury to do something like a massage.
Yeah.
And then once I realized, P.S. Katie, you are an adult now, there's no turning back and you are making money. Then I started to realize I needed to let go of that part of the guilt. And then a lot of it too, for me, I wish that Nick and I could have a family right now. We hope to one day be parents, but right now for us, our priority is my health. And I use the term hashtag cancer perk, and I tag things that to me are a perk of having cancer. And so when I talk to my sisters and cancer perk, I work Monday through Wednesday. When I talk to my sisters on Thursday and Friday and they say, oh, what are you doing today? I say, oh, you know, I'm going to do some writing and then I've got, you know, a facial at 2:00. And then tomorrow I've got acupuncture. Oh, must be nice. You know, 'cause they've got a toddler taking a nap or kids that need rides places. And I'm like, you know what? This is a hashtag cancer perk that I don't have kids costing me money right now. And so this is how I'm choosing to spend my money and spend my time. And I'm not going to feel bad about it. And I so wish that we could be parents, but I try to see the silver lining in every situation in my life of, well, what's the perk of this? So we can't have kids. And that is a bummer. We can't have kids or be parents right now. A perk of that is that Nick and I can travel all that we want. We can just do more because we're not tied down by children. And so I see my friends who are parents and I see the fog that they're in. And I know that they have perks to that. But right now I have to just focus on us and what is the cancer perk for us in this and how are we going to spin this in a positive way?
Well, and isn't that powerful? Because the truth is, yes, you want that. And yes, however that comes, whether through your body or through someone else's body to you, you will be a mother and he will be a father and you will be able to have that experience, which is beautiful, but you're not denying that, which is so huge. And then the other piece is like, shoot, we got the world by the balls. Like, let's go do this. And so, you know, we don't have to spend time talking all about cancer and all that glory, but I mean, it would probably behoove us to talk about where you are in your process now as far as healing or it lying dormant or, you know, what have you. So yes. Where are we?
So we are 4 hours away from my scan. I get scanned every 2 months. And it started when I was 31 years old as ocular melanoma. I was driving to see a client and a black line started just bouncing across the windshield. And I looked at my colleague and I said, do you see that? And she said, no. And how about I drive back to the office? And when we get in to meet with this client, she was a high-powered CMO. She was all about metrics. I'm a headhunter. We were talking about a digital analyst that she wanted. I am just totally distracted. And I touched my right shoulder with my right hand and I could see it. And I touched my left shoulder with my left hand and I couldn't see it. So my peripheral vision was very, very subtly cut off. I called my ophthalmologist. They had me come in the next day. And immediately they said, there's a bump on your retina. It could, you know, it can be serious. It could be a retina tear. We've already called Dr. Hovland's office. He's a retina ophthalmologist. You can go in and see him right now. So I drive over there and I called my sister and I'm like, something's wrong with my eyes. And she and I were both scared because my dad was diagnosed with macular degeneration when he was my age and he's legally blind. And so we thought potentially that was what was going on. So I get there and right then and there, they tell me that I have a nipple shaped tumor in my eyeball. And I was terrified. I called my sister again. She dropped her kids off with my other sister and she came back to the doctor's office with me that afternoon. And Dr. Hovland walked me through what was going to happen. So they scanned my body. Then I was clean everywhere else. And then they did what's called, plaque therapy. There's a way more technical term for it than that, but they attach to the back of my eyeball. They stitch in and anchor this plaque that's full of radiation seeds and they leave it there for a week. And I wore a lead eye patch and developed a love of pirates. And after that, well, during that, they biopsied the cells and told me that we would know what we were dealing with in about a month. So about a month later, I get a phone call, great excitement from Dr. Hovland's assistant. And she told me, I'm so excited to tell you, your cells tested as a 1A. It's a best case scenario. And what that means is if you're classified as a 2, you have a 50-50 chance of developing stage 4 or metastatic where it spreads to another organ. If you're a 1B, you've got about a 25% chance that it's going to spread. And if you're a 1A, it's a less than 2% chance that this is going to spread. So I was elated. I experienced this life high. I was single at the time. I went out that night dancing with friends and this stranger walks up to me and she says, this is just going to sound really, really weird. And I don't mean to sound creepy, but you seem so happy. And I looked at her and I said, I became a cancer survivor today. And she high-fived me and she said, well, that's a good reason to be happy. And I thought that was it. And I was making some minor changes. I had bought a Nutribullet. I was starting to incorporate some fruits and vegetables into my diet, which had never happened before. And a few months later, I met Nick and we quickly fell in love and we dated for about a year. And 4 years ago this week, it was Thanksgiving week and Nick had planned to propose to me on Thanksgiving Day. And 2 days before that, I had a routine liver ultrasound. And I got a phone call that afternoon from the oncologist herself. And she said, you have about 10 suspicious lesions on your liver and we need to get you biopsied like this week. So I had had that same ultrasound 6 months prior. And in that time period, just it attacked my body.
And do they know why? Like, cause I mean, it just seems crazy. Like how fast that happened.
Because cancer is a bitch. Andrea. I don't. And part of the reason is that I've never once Googled my cancer. And some people think
that is good.
But I have a blog post on top 10 tips for dealing with a cancer diagnosis. And that's one of my tips is you either research or you don't, but you make that decision and you don't let anybody tell you otherwise. I had a woman at a conference once for ocular melanoma completely ream me for not doing research. And she was up on her high horse telling me she does 14 to 15 hours of research every day. And I'm like, listen, Karen, congratulations. You do you, I'll do me. And if that is what helps you in your journey, do it. But I know myself well enough to know that if a side effect says you will have itchy elbows, I will have itchy elbows.
Yeah.
But if I don't read that side effect, probably not going to happen. So I really believe in the mind body connection. And so that's something that I do to protect myself. So I've never once done any research. So when people ask me specific questions about my disease, I say, well, call my agent, who is my dad, who is a doctor, who has done all the research, and he's called doctors all across the country on my behalf. And I'm very, very lucky to have him. I'm very lucky to have him. Where am I at in the process?
So you got diagnosed and then you ended up going through some trials. The trial didn't work. I do remember that.
Yeah. So I've been in and out of three clinical trials, and whether or not they worked, we will never know. One of the trials I was in, so Nick and I got engaged on Thanksgiving. I was diagnosed on a Tuesday. We got engaged on Thanksgiving. On Friday, I had my biopsy and everything was confirmed. And
so you're like thrilled because you've met the man of your dreams and you're like, holy God, I have cancer in my liver now.
Yes. And my sisters were like, well, what are you going to do? And his text back to them was, I'm still asking her to marry me. She's the same girl and I still love her. He's amazing. Like, he went into this eyes wide open. He's been my rock. This has been just as scary for him as it has for me. And every day I'm like, I can't even imagine. I swear I would be living in my sister's basement if I didn't have him. We spent the month of December that year, my dad on the phone every single day, all over the country, trying to find the best treatment options. There was nothing. There was only one treatment FDA approved at that point called Yervoy. And I want to say it had like less than 20% chance of survival if you went on Yervoy. So my dad said, no, we're going to go to the cutting edge. We're going to go to the Sloan Ketterings of the world, and we're going to find the best treatment option for you. So we went to New York a couple times in December, and right after January 1st, which is my birthday, I moved to New York for 5 weeks. I got an apartment and I got myself into this clinical trial. So the first 5 weeks were really labor intensive. I had a lot of, I had a biopsy, I had a scan, I had blood work every single week. And I was in that trial for 8 months.
What happened mentally to you when you're going through this process? Did you take a leave of absence from work? What happened?
So my boss at the time, he kept saying, Katie, take time off. And I said, listen, the biggest thing I need right now for myself is normalcy.
Yeah.
I need to be able to go to work every day. I need to have this purpose. I need to have this distraction. My team was amazing. We were going through a lot as a team that year. One of my colleagues lost her 10-month-old son.
Oh my God.
We were dealing with some heavy, heavy shit. And it was such an amazing team because we just rallied together. And I would go to work on tough days and I would just say, we're not talking about it today. You know, let me get into my work and I'll let you guys know if and when I want to talk about it. And they were very respectful of that. And my boss kept saying, take time off. And I finally said to him, I said, Eric, like, you don't know what I'm going through, but trust me when I say work is what I need right now. And he was like, okay, I trust you. And so I think mentally it was one day at a time. It was just take care of myself. I mean, Nick and I moved into an apartment together. I had things like canceling my cable from my old apartment that I just couldn't get to. So finally one day I said, I just need a personal day to just get my head wrapped around some things. And he was like, yes, of course, you know, take that time. So it was keeping after work, but then also recognizing when I just needed a minute to myself. The travel, once I got through the 5 weeks, then I was traveling every month for what I called my drug deal because I was taking oral pills. So I'd go to New York to pick up my drugs. Flying to New York every month, you have to book those. You have to book that. So there was a lot of maintenance in terms of being a travel agent on top of a cancer patient and dealing with all of that. But really the focus was my immediate family and my fiance. We wanted to get me in treatment and then we planned our wedding. We ended up getting married in February of that year. And I had a coworker tell everyone we were having a shotgun wedding because she didn't know what that meant. And that first year was, it was tough. I used Caring Bridge, and that's also in my blog post, because I advise that for everyone, because it just takes the load off my family of not having to share with the probably thousands of people who know me either personally or through my family and want to keep up. It was a way for us to communicate that. And initially I didn't do any of the writing. And after I got settled into treatment, I started writing, and it was my way to kind of keep in touch with everyone. And I feel like people really appreciated hearing from me. And it was really therapeutic for me to kind of rehash what I was going through and make light of it. I mean, I've had a sense of humor through all of this. I have a lot of eye jokes. And I mean, I had, like, this is an example of one of my side effects. I had Jennifer Aniston sized nipples from one of my treatments. And I think that's really funny. And I told my dad about it, because one day he's like, "How are your nipples?" And I was like, "Oh my gosh, I must have told you about my nipples."
Wait, what? Back me up. What happened with your nipples?
One of the treatments I was taking, so it was still in that first year at Sloan Kettering. I was, for 6 months, I was on one pill. And you said that that trial didn't necessarily work. We don't know, because for 6 months, I didn't have any growth. So it may have at least halted the growth of tumors for 6 months. Because we know that in 6 months, I got 10 tumors. In June of 2015, there was growth in the tumors. And so I went to the second arm of the trial. And that's when my ass really got kicked, because I lost my appetite. I lost 30 pounds. I was losing hair. Just my hair was thinning. And in that treatment, I literally, my nipples got huge and really tender. And they they hurt so bad. This is another massive overshare, and I'm really sorry if you're going to be annoyed with this. I have brown hair, and my hair started growing in blonde everywhere. And I first noted it in the pubic region. And I was like, "Oh my God, Nick, my pubic hair is growing in blonde." And he was like, "That's really weird. Like, that's really weird." And then the next weekend I noticed it on my head, and he goes, "Well, you were in the sun this weekend." And I was like, "I have not been sunbathing my vagina." And he's like, "No, that's a really good point." And so that, to me, that's funny. And
yes, you have all to laugh.
You have to laugh or you will cry your eyes out. And that is a quote from the Indigo Girls.
We like, love them.
You have to. And so I would tell these stories. Like, I had hemorrhoids, and I would tell people about my giant nipples and my hemorrhoids. And I have this friend, my sister's friend from high school, and I've known him forever, but he is a cancer survivor, and he has become a very good friend through this process. And he emailed me when I sent that post out, and he was like, "Oh my gosh, Katie," I had to have surgery on my asshole because my hemorrhoids got so bad. And so it was just like being able to share that, and then getting the feedback I got, that's what's gets me through this, is knowing I'm not alone in this. And so I know if I can share this to somebody else who down the road is going to go through it, they're going to hopefully take something from that and know they're not alone.
Yeah. Well, and before we end our time just for now, because we will obviously have more things to talk about, especially as the book gets closer. But so you said that you did not eat fruits and vegetables before this. So we know how your mind and your body, or your mind and your spirit, have evolved through this process, and how you've changed who you are as a result, which is a beautiful thing. How have you changed your diet? Or have you changed your diet? And do you think that is contributing to your wellness now? So just to be clear, we are going to find out today what the state of affairs is with you.
Next week we'll find out.
Next week, and we're shining the light, and we know your health and wholeness no matter what. So we are knowing that. However, did you change your diet? And if so, how does that change how you feel, and how do you think it's changed the outcome that you're projecting on this scan?
So 2015, just to kind of wrap up the treatment, was an ass kicking. I got out of that trial and I went into a second trial, and I only lasted a day in that. And then we went through this liver embolization procedure with Dr. Nutting, who's based here in Colorado and is amazing. And it's only FDA approved for metastatic colon cancer. But he was able to, because of the pain in my liver, he was able to get it approved.
Wait, back up. Did you actually feel pain in your liver? Have you felt your liver at all in this process?
I'm going to not answer that question right now.
Okay.
So we did that, and my body responded really well to that. So since then, we only treated half the liver during that embolization procedure. And it was sort of the benchmark. When the half that was untreated had growth, we did a second liver embolization procedure. So as of September of this year, I went 2 years without any treatment, which is amazing. However, this past May, I did have it spread to my brain. And so this past May, I had gamma knife procedure. So I haven't had any systemic treatment, which means any treatment like a chemo or an infusion or an immunotherapy or a pill that I'm taking every day. And that has really opened up my schedule and freed up time for me to focus on other parts of my health. And that is when I started to shift and focus on my diet. In the back of my mind, I always knew I eat literally like a kindergartner. That's my best example. And it all started with a Nutribullet. That was the first thing I bought. I call it the gateway appliance. I started putting kale and cucumbers and carrots in there, and then I would mask that with berries, and I would have smoothies every day. And so that was sort of the start. And in 2016, when I got my first sort of real break from treatment, I actually talked to Dr. Nutting about my issues with food. One of my issues with food is that my whole life I've equated food with weight. Mm-hmm. And I've always been a petite person. And so I've always thought, well, I can eat whatever I want because I don't have weight issues. That is so wrong. That is a horrible philosophy to go through in life. And so I started to take ownership of that and to know that I am responsible for how I feel because I am responsible for what I put into my body. So I talked to Dr. Nutting. I said, I'm really struggling with my diet because I just eat crap. And I am the queen of freschetta pizzas. Like, I make frozen pizzas multiple times a week. I'm from Nebraska. Hamburgers are my favorite meal. Like, I'll have like a small green salad maybe once a week. It's really bad. And he made me promise, and this is the second time I've had a doctor make me promise something. And what I've learned is if I love and trust a doctor and they say, promise me you'll do this, you do it. So he said, promise me that you will call my friend, Dr. Ed Carrere. He's based in Colorado. He works with advanced stage cancer patients. And I think he can help you. So I called Dr. Carrere and I went to see him, and my dad ended up going with me that day. And I told my dad, I don't want to hear peep out of you, because my dad is pretty old school in terms of medicine. And he said, no, I'm curious to learn what this guy has to say. So Nick and my dad and I went to meet with him, and he gave me a homework assignment, and he said, I need you to read the China study before our next appointment, but I'm going to do a bunch of blood work on you today. And then we're going to take a look at that panel, and we're going to see where there are deficiencies in your blood. And I'm going to make recommendations on supplements based on that. I can tell you already, I want you taking liver GI detox. I want you taking curcumin, which is turmeric. And then I want you to read the China study. And next time we're going to talk more about food. So what's that?
Oh, I didn't say anything.
Okay. Sorry. And so, got it. So I read the China study, and a couple weeks later I got an email from my dad, and he said, I'm reading the China study.
Shut up.
And he said, you're right. There's a lot to this, and there's some things I don't agree with. And I've heard that the China study is flawed in some ways, but it really gave me the baseline. It gave me the new, it gave me the facts I needed to overcome my willpower or my lack of willpower when it comes to food. And so that was really important to me. And the China study supports a whole foods diet or a vegan diet. And I call myself a half-ass vegan. So I am, we used to have meat with every meal, and now we maybe have meat a couple times a month. We do fish every once in a while, but I mostly do veggies now. I mostly don't do dairy, but if I go out to lunch and there's a salad that has goat cheese on it, I'm going to have goat cheese. So he really, in our next meeting, he really dove into food and what it means and how it feeds our bodies. And that was sort of the start of me making a major shift. And then from there, Andrea, it's a daily, not battle. It's just something I think about every single day, something I'm learning from every single day.
It's a path of mindfulness with it and really understanding like what you're, regardless of what state you're in physically, like what is my body calling for right now? And I actually had a conversation with someone yesterday and said, if you are smelling food or looking at food and you're having an adverse reaction, your body's probably telling you it doesn't want that, you know? And, but you have to get down the road with even having that conversation about listening to yourself and, and you're having a new relationship with food and your body in general. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yes. And it's, I mean, that my latest obsession is Medical Medium, and I know you're familiar with him.
Amen. We love him.
Anthony William, a really good friend of mine from growing up. So we went to grade school and high school together. She went to college with Sarah. She reached out to me earlier this year, and she said, I'm sure you get bombarded. I really want to tell you about something. Can we talk? And it was right around my brain tumor stuff. And I said, I am, first of all, always open to hearing. So please send me information, but I'm not in a position to talk right now. So she emails me all about him, and her story was chronic fatigue and fertility issues. And I was intrigued, and I'm like, yeah, I definitely want to read his books. But again, there's so much information out there. I am constantly ordering books, and then maybe like 6 months later, I'll be like, oh yeah, I need to read this book. I'm on this constant quest for more information. And she was in town this summer, and I went up and I met with her, and she started telling me more about it. And I was like, okay, I have to. I ordered all three of his books at the time. And I took the first one with me when Nick and I went to England this summer, and was just fascinated by it. And so for me, it's this constant, I lose sight of it. You know, I like read about it, and then I'm really gung-ho and really good and very disciplined. And then time goes on, and then I start cheating, and then it's a slippery slope. And then suddenly you're getting Qdoba on a Monday night, and you're like, what am I doing? And so
that's real though. Cause sometimes you have to go to Qdoba. Sometimes you have to put the Costco eggplant Parmesan in the oven. Like, because that's what it is sometimes. Like,
exactly. And I've learned to be, just to show myself more grace of I'm doing the best that I can do. And I have to remind myself, compare nearly 37-year-old Katie's refrigerator to 27-year-old Katie's refrigerator, which literally was like Coors Light and a variety of craft brew. And the freezer was chock full of freshetta and Red Baron pizzas. I have come such a long way. And when Nick and I met, Nick has always been just like a steady, healthy person. He always had chicken and brown rice and veggies for dinner. And then he'd come over to my house and I'd be like, so we can either have ham and pineapple freshetta or four cheese freshetta. So just take your every time I'm in the kitchen, one thing I did was I bought myself a damn cute apron. I'm like, if I am going to be in this kitchen as much as I'm going to be in this kitchen, I'm going to look cute. So I got a really cute apron. And honestly, at first I hated being in the kitchen, and now I love it. I love coming home from work and cooking a meal. I feel my mom in the kitchen, and I know that sounds really weird, but I just...
That's not to me. No, it does not.
I just feel her with me in there. And then Nick will come in, and he, like, every time I'm in the kitchen, he'll say, Katie, I'm so proud of you. So proud of how far you've come. Because he's like, you make me look unhealthy now. Because you are so much healthier than what you were when when we first met.
How do you feel as a result of changing your diet?
I feel amazing. And actually this summer I worked with a nutritionist for the second time. So the first time I worked with a nutritionist, she was great, but she was operating under the false assumption that I knew what saute meant. And and so we'd sit and she'd be like, so just, you know, saute this and saute that and get some bok choy. And I'm like, what language are you speaking? Like, I did not know anything about cooking. And I think this time I was in a better position to meet with a nutritionist, but this nutritionist did blood work and she had me cut out a ton of stuff. I also cut out gluten this year. So I have two siblings who are celiac. My other sister was having bad health issues this year, like really achy joints, and they could not figure out what it was. Her stomach hurt all the time. She cut out gluten and she is fine. And she's also tested for celiac, but she doesn't have it and neither do I. But I feel so much better and so does she. Yeah. And so when Robin, my nutritionist, did this blood work, she said, you are not going back to gluten. She said, I'm going to have you cut out a bunch of stuff, including gluten, but you are not going back to gluten. It is not serving your body well. So that has made a huge difference. She also talked to me about alcohol and I was like, la, 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 la.
Yeah.
She said, you know, I quit drinking at home. And I was like, yeah, no, that's literally never going to happen. And for some reason this year we ran out of wine and I just didn't buy anymore. And so I quit drinking wine during the week and I feel it when I drink it. I mean,
I know it sucks so bad. I love a cocktail and I'm in the same boat. Like I can't drink anymore and it sucks. And then I'll give myself a month and then I'll like have a drink and I'm like, I can't, like, yeah. I just can't. And that's just where we are.
And I love my wine. And last night I caved because I have a scan today. And I was like, I'm having wine because I have a scan today. And I literally feel it this morning.
That sucks.
And part of it was my brother was coming into town and my mother-in-law was in town. So we had stocked up. So this is the only bottle we have left. So I'm like, okay, once this is gone, I'm done. Cause I'm not going to waste the whole bottle. So I will finish it. But
you have to drink
But I saw Robin recently and I was like, you're never going to believe it, but I'm not drinking at home anymore. And she's like, oh my gosh, I'm so proud of you. But I also like, I partake in marijuana and I take tincture every night before bed. And I just tried last night for the first time. I don't know what it is, but it's this little vape thing that I can tell you more about later.
Well, THC kills cancer. So you should be doing that. Now, you know, I actually, on another cancer note, my friend just got diagnosed with breast cancer, has had her mastectomy. She's starting to chemo today. And she's been on CBD for anxiety. And I was like, you need to amp up the CBD. And her doctor told her, don't take CBD. And she's in Indiana. And he said, don't take CBD, but you can take THC. And I was like, huh. Like, I don't feel like people are educated enough about it. And I am certainly not an expert, but I'm like, I don't think that's legit information, which is a whole other podcast of cancer and cannabis, because I do think that we could have that really cool conversation.
Yeah. Well, and what I tell my dad and other professionals is chemo might not help me, but it's going to hurt me. And the supplements I'm taking and my theory on THC and CBD is the same thing. It might not help me, but it's not going to hurt me. So what harm is there? You know what I mean?
Right.
And so that's sort of, I do believe that the supplements I take a lot of supplements. I believe that that is serving my body well. I believe that the food I'm putting in is serving my body well. And the THC, I don't know, but I don't think it's harming me. And so
there have been studies done. I mean, all these cannabis companies are doing studies. They're employing these doctors, these scientists, and I mean, known studies that THC and hemp oil help our bodies because our endocannabinoid system is our master controller. And they've just started talking about it in the last 20 years, which is crazy. You have a whole system that controls everything. And we actually produce cannabinoids in our body, but not enough because we don't have enough omega-3s. another podcast, but
so fascinating.
It is so fascinating. So yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of information out there, but
really.
So when are you going to release this book? Because I'm really excited.
I know. I should send you my sample chapter.
Girl, yeah.
Okay, so I am at the point right now where I need to start looking for a
an editor.
And I have to do a book proposal in order to do that. And so that's the daunting task that I'm held up in right now. So,
well, it's going to be amazing. I cannot thank you enough for sharing yourself with me and with all of these wonderful people. Because it doesn't matter where you are on your journey in life. Like, your story is inspirational and you are here. And this is a beautiful gift. And honestly, I'm just really excited to see what happens next, because the universe is calling you to light this mother up. So I am excited.
Thank you. I'm excited. I really feel that cancer has been a gift, and I know that sounds crazy, but it's enlightened my life. It's made my life so much richer. And it's just taught me so much. And I just want to share that wisdom. And I know that I just know what a journey it is. And when I meet newly diagnosed cancer patients, I want to say to them, like, oh damn, like, you're on the path now and your life is never going to be the same.
Yeah.
And, you can either let it take you down, and not necessarily life or death, but you can let it take you down in a negative way, or you can try to find the hashtag cancer perks and make the best of it. And that's what I've chosen to do.
Well, amen. Thank you so much for sharing. I really appreciate it. I love you. You are amazing. And we will continue this conversation. I definitely think we need to have the cancer and CBD conversation and bring some doctors, other experts onto a little panel. So
cool.
No, I'll be blowing you up for that, girl.
Thanks, girl.
Thank you. This has been the Wonder Health Podcast with Katie Ortman Doble. Look for the release of her wonderful memoir, Love Your Future Self. We'll keep you posted when that comes out. And what is your blog? What's the URL?
So it's actually Love Your Future Happy Self. And my blog is futurehappyself.com.
Love Your Future Happy Self and futurehappyself.com?
Yes.
Oh, I got that right. Awesome. Sure. Well, check her out. We'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.